This is King World News. I'm Eric King, and you're about to hear a tremendous interview from Nomi Prinz. But first, this segment is sponsored by BitGold. And for a short time only, they are running a special for King World News readers and listeners, giving them a 5% deposit bonus up to $100. What that means is if you open an account for yourself or a loved one and you deposit $2,000, you will instantly be credited with $2,100 of gold in your account. BitGold is revolutionizing the world one account at a time, and you can become part of that revolution by opening your account today at bitgold.com. But without any further delay, here is Nomi Prinz. Joining us now is Nomi Prinz. Nomi, obviously you just took this trip to South America. Let's go ahead and open up with that. Can you talk to the global listeners about what you saw, what unfolded down there, what you were doing?
Yeah, I've actually just come back this time from 2 weeks in, 2.5 weeks in Brazil. So I basically went to four of the main cities in Brazil. I started in Sao Paulo, which is the sort of business capital, and then move on to the southernmost city, which is Porto Alegre, where I have a number of students working with me on analysis for my next book, Artisans of Money. And then I went on to Rio, where there's obviously preparation for the Olympics and also very key funding deficits in terms of paying anybody who works for the city going on there as part of their bigger financial crisis. And then I ended up in Brasilia, which is the capital, where I met with folks from the central bank there, the Ministry of Finance, and the World Bank group that's situated in Brazil. So it was a great trip. Lots going on there politically, and also a lot that connects into just the general global geopolitical and economic landscape that's in flux now between where the U.S. is present versus where the BRICS, the NDB, the New Development Bank, and China is present, and Brazil, aside from its political crises, is also a focal point for a lot of that, which doesn't really get discussed that much in the press right now because of the political crisis. So doing some digging on all of that.
Can you talk about your interactions with the central planners in Latin America?
Yeah, so one of the things I was talking to one of the senior advisors at the central bank in Brazil was, first and foremost, how money has moved into Brazil, like what kind of capital flow, what kind of speculative flow, and how that was connected really to Federal Reserve policy. Because everything that's happening in the world right now is connected and very predicated on zero interest rate policy that's emanated from the Federal Reserve. Because even though we're in the eighth year of that policy, and we always, every month we talk about what Janet Yellen's going to say, what the FOMC is going to do. Are we growing? Are we not growing? Are we going to raise rates? Are we not going to raise rates? Of course, we've only had rates raised in the United States by 25 basis points, which is nothing. And then we've had Janet Yellen go in and basically backtrack on that because global growth is still so slow, which is what's discussed. But what's actually happening beyond global growth issues is that speculative money, cheap money, continues to flow in and out of places, legally and illegally, depending on the situation. The Panama paper story broke while I was down there. Legally or illegally, it finds places to be in for a short-term speculative bet, and it leaves much more quickly. So this was kind of the beginning of the conversation that I had with the senior advisor at the central bank in Brazil, because Brazil's rates, interest rates, are at 14.25%, which is really basically the highest set of interest rates out there. And there's a reason for that that's domestic, which is Brazil has a lot of inflation issues and other things. But it's also exactly opposite of what many other countries have done, both in Latin America and throughout the world, in that they have followed the Federal Reserve down to grinding rates to zero. And so it's very different. And they've had problems over the years in determining, do we do what's best for the country? Do we do what the Federal Reserve is leading us to do, which would have been to reduce rates substantially? And they did that at one point, and that was a disaster. And that's why they've raised them back, because their inflation raised after they reduced their rates down to 7.25%, trying to do what the Fed wanted them to do. So we talked about that. And the fact that this is very interesting, that speculative capital from the U.S. to Latin America that can be attributed to QE, so not regular speculative capital, but when you throw out all the other variables, 54% of speculative capital going into just Brazil from the U.S. is 100% not correlated but caused by QE. And 64% of funds that are coming from the U.S. into the rest of Latin America, net of Brazil, so into their equity markets, is directly caused by QE. So that's just one area of the world that's had the significant adjustment to speculative capital coming in and not staying in to do productive economic growth types of projects, not infrastructure, not things that help creators sustain jobs there as they don't in the States. So we see the same phenomenon happening globally. So we discussed that. It was his study that showed me, and he has, you know, these amazing graphs that are very clear on this, the real extent to which the speculative capital is predicated on Federal Reserve policy throughout Latin America.
You know, you've talked about the global economy, global financial system being a train wreck going forward, Nomi. How will this shake out for Latin America?
Well, here's the thing. There's, on one hand, rates are still at zero here, and speculative capital is still looking for places to go because it's not going into long-term productive economic projects in the U.S. or even internationally, but it's still on the hunt. And so that will continue to destabilize a lot of these countries now and going forward because it's very mercurial. It comes in, it goes out. It's not there to help. It's there just to bet and to leave. And that continues to leave a sort of foreign policy instability there. And I think that continues as long as rates stay where they are, as long as money is available at no cost and therefore no responsibility for the financial system, whether that's through the multinational banks or whether that's through hedge funds, whether that's through the shadow banking system. The reality is it's all connected. Whichever element of the financial system this money passes through, it's all connected to these interest rates, and it has a destabilizing effect on the world. The IMF just came out with yet another report about how this type of phenomenon continues to destabilize the world. And then when you add into that any time you have national slower growth for local reasons, then you have a situation where you don't have sustainability of that going forward, and it hurts the people on the ground in those countries. And that's part of what's happening. Now, aside from that, there's something interesting that's happening, which is the fight, the renewed fight kind of over Latin America and Brazil in particular between the United States and China. Brazil and China are, of course, very strong trading partners. China has increased its infrastructure funding into Brazil to help to reestablish themselves as not just a trade partner, but a long-term partner. They get resources from Brazil, and then they finance infrastructure. They've done this in companies like Petrobras, which is a very corrupt oil company, but they've done it, and there's two Chinese banks that have basically helped to fund Petrobras' problems right now to allow them to pay off some of their debt, $12 billion worth of it, over the next year, so that in the future they can have access to the oil resources that Petrobras has as a state-owned oil company. So there's reasons for China now expanding into not just Brazil but Latin America to be the capital that's more long-term resource extraction but infrastructure building-oriented than simply speculative. So that's what's happening in the background. Whereas the U.S. money is more speculative, the Chinese funding has much more of a sort of long-term alliance goal. And that's one of the interesting things that's unfolding there and will be unfolding, particularly in Latin America, but really throughout other aspects of the world, too.
Let's talk about China a bit more for just a minute, Nomi, because Stephen Leeb says rumors of their demise are greatly exaggerated. The Chinese are going to be just fine. This is what countries go through that are growing. And I know we have a very complicated financial system now with derivatives and everything else, and the leverage in China is enormous. But China going forward, is it a train wreck, or are they going to be able to survive and thrive?
I think the fact that even though there's leverage in China, which there certainly is, there's corruption in its banking system like anywhere else, more so, I think, today than perhaps before they were westernized to that extent with the way in which they do their finances on a banking perspective. But I think that even today we saw trade figures that were much higher than were expected, and that could be signaling a sort of plateau of this slowdown in growth, and that growth could turn around from here and move up. But also what China's been doing, which is smart from a long-term growth perspective, is that they have been establishing these infrastructure and resource alliances throughout the world, that they've been strategic in looking at what the long-term economic strength could be. So even though their more near-term growth has slowed down, and it's still higher than in the U.S., but even though it has slowed down, and we keep talking about how it slowed down and how, you know, there could be problems, therefore, and therefore their consumers aren't going to buy as many goods, and everybody had anticipated China was going to be the big consumer in the world, et cetera, I think that China has a much longer-term plan for a sustainable economy than it's given credit for. And that's why these infrastructure projects, resource development alliances, being one of the new reserve currencies now, and having a seat at the table for the new development bank, you know, establishing their own development bank outside of the World Bank and IMF structures. All of these are a sign of planning. And I think that in a world where, you know, you're looking on the one hand at much more risk-taking, speculative, sort of capital and the financial system, and then on the other side, yeah, with its corruption as well, of course, but a system that also looks at planning for more the longer term and devaluing the element of speculation to an extent, then yes, there's certainly leverage there that will be a problem, but to an extent that's greater than in the United States and in Europe, I think that makes it a stronger player for the future and the longer-term future.
And now let's turn to gold for just a minute. You know, the Chinese continue to accumulate massive amounts of gold. What do you think is going to happen to gold in the future? Meaning, it's been inside of a secular bull market, but is the bear phase over and we're in a new part of the bullish phase on the secular bull?
I think there's going to continue to be a lot of volatility in gold as these power plays go on between, you know, the U.S., China, the dollar, the yen, the euro, and so forth. Predicated on the remainder of monetary policy shifting and currency wars and so forth, because they are in the background. Gold has done quite well and sustained itself quite well relative to other currencies. Now it's appreciated relative to the dollar as well in the nearer term, but even before that, as it was as its value was lower relative to the dollar, it was still doing well against the euro and against the yen and so forth. So on an international basis, gold really has held its value, and partly that is because of the bid from central banks outside. The IMF also is involved in having gold and in increasing its gold reserves and so forth. So there's a sort of external from the U.S. Growth in the need for gold and allocating and keeping gold sort of on the side for the future. So I think that gives gold a bid for the medium term, for the longer term. There will be volatility in the shorter term, mostly relative to the dollar. And I think that with respect to the dollar, there's the possibility that as the world economy remains weak, even though the dollar has declined slightly relative to other currencies in the very near term, it has the potential to be also to appreciate, to sort of be in a volatility band for the near term as other economies continue to be weak. And by default, the U.S. and therefore the dollar appears to be strong. So I think gold continues to stay a little bit in a range, but in an upside range. And I think relative to currencies outside the dollar, it continues to appreciate. And relative to the dollar, it will in the longer term, but you do have this sort of vulnerability and volatility in the shorter term because of the relative perceived strength, not necessarily actual strength, but perceived strength of the U.S. relative to the rest of the world at this particular time.
Let's talk a little bit bigger picture here. Peter Buchvar just warned, I'll say it again, for all the global talk about deflation, the end of the commodity bear market will be shifting global inflation stats higher in the back half of 2016 and into 2017, a scenario no one seems to be paying attention to. And if correct, global bond markets are ticking time bombs. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, first of all, we've seen and we know we have asset bubbles in the equity market, and those have been fueled. They have been fueled by cheap money policy. They've been fueled by the Federal Reserve's now almost 8-year policy and the ECB's connection to them, the Bank of Japan, and even to a lesser extent, the People's Bank of China, that have basically coordinated their approach to feeding money into the system, liquidity into the system, which has mostly gone into propping up equity markets and to a lesser extent, bond markets. As long as that game continues, and right now we've seen because of extra volatility in the markets, it's sort of coming to an end, but it's not over yet. The ECB, for example, just extended its policy of QE from 60 billion euro a month to 80 billion euro a month for really no reason, except for the fact that they still need to pump liquidity in the system. And now not only are they buying sovereign types of securities, they've opened that to buying now corporate bonds. So they've expanded the help, the aid that they've been giving, which is creating asset bubbles for bonds, as well as for equities, where it's easier for this money to flow. So we have inflation. Will the bond market deflate? It will deflate, absolutely, when these policies run out of steam or get taken off the table. And that is why central banks keep coordinating and are so afraid to go back on what they started in 2008 and have merely accumulated since 2008. If any of these policies were to have been working for actual real economic growth, they wouldn't need to have gone on for this many years, which means they actually have only existed in order to help inflate assets in the financial system and create liquidity that would otherwise would not have been there for these assets. So as long as they continue to pump, as long as they continue to maintain what they are doing, we will see the remaining dribbling of these assets being supported. And when they stop, when it can't happen any longer, when they start to raise rates, when securities start to default more, particularly corporate securities, and particularly in countries outside the U.S. and in certain sectors like oil, which even though oil prices are going up, is still facing defaults and write-downs across all the banks' books. When this starts to happen more in a cumulative fashion, that's when you start to have deflation, not necessarily of a resource deflation, but a bond deflation and equity deflation. And right now we're just seeing volatility in that regard.
As that begins to unfold, Nomi, what you just described there, is that the beginning of the end?
That is, and we've talked about this. It's a transition to the destruction of this fabricated, and I call it artisanal money framework, where the only thing, and this is not just a few of us now that are talking about this. This is you. This is people on your show. This is the IMF. These are certain individuals who have worked at central banks throughout the world. The only game in town has been fabricated money, has been this external supply of stimulation that is unprecedented, besides from 2008, in the history of any central bank. And so when that disappears, when that spirals out, when economies and financial systems are left to fend for themselves, particularly financial systems, because a lot of this hasn't gone into the actual real economies, when financial systems don't have any more help, that's when things start to implode very quickly. Again, that is the fear. That is why coordinated efforts continue to happen. So even though the Fed, when it raised its rates by a smidge in December, that was followed by substantial activity with all the other three major central banks in trying to effectively globally discount what the Fed had just done. And that's because of the coordinated fear that these central banks have of seeing a complete implosion in their own financial systems, their own banks, and then a knock-on into their own economies, which have not actually been helped to begin with. So there's right now fear is motivating the coordinated approach of ongoing monetary policy, which has just become artificial stimulation to these markets. It's effective on the surface, but it hasn't really fixed the financial system or economies going forward, which is why it's still being made available.
I know in the past you've talked about this cycling into the destruction of the current monetary system. Can you go over that one more time for people that may not have heard you speak? And then also what people can do to protect themselves against that coming carnage. We'll close with that.
What has happened with some central banks reluctantly and with some that have been there from the beginning is that the financial crisis in 2008, the mortgage-related, subprime-related crisis, morphed into something much bigger than that. And in the post-crisis, it has been almost an excuse. It has been an excuse for central banks to coordinate a policy that has maintained zero or negative interest rates, that has allowed the financial behemoths, the larger banks and their clients and the larger corporations to have cheap money at impunity, which they have used to speculate, you know, as I started in the beginning of our conversation, in Latin America and in other countries, without any form of responsibility for that capital to be used to anything productive or long-term sustainable. That's what's happened. So when I talk about a transition to destruction of this system, first of all, we have to understand that this system has never been this coordinated for this long. So what has happened is in the fear of something worse occurring, led by the central bank, and then to the ECB and the BOJ, the Bank of Japan, and then reluctantly the People's Bank of China, with some other European banks thrown in there, what has happened is the ongoing artificial stimulation of the system and the coordination, the word, the term. For my new book, I'm looking at actually the number of times that the word coordination comes up in Fed speak and in Fed policy statements has increased dramatically over this period relative to periods in the past. And so we have this allied approach, really, of keeping markets up, keeping the financial system greased. And that's what I mean by when that transitions to destruction, when that goes away, when either some of those partners have to deal with their own economies, which hasn't happened yet because they're all sort of keeping each other up like a house of cards. But when that happens, when defaults come in, when some outside war occurs, when there is an element of the system, whether it is, you know, housing in Spain again, or whether it's Greece not being able to pay its most recent, quote, bailout activities, whether it's Brazil's corruption ongoing, whether it is anything that might happen in the world, the house of cards can spiral out of that, and then the coordinated approach of these central banks becomes less effective. And that's when, once it becomes less effective very quickly. They are afraid of that, which is why they keep piling on their coordinated strategies. That's what's happening now. But when things start to unravel, they will unravel very quickly, and that's what I mean by transitioning into destruction. Because once things drop too quickly, it's like that, you know, sort of dropping knife thing. It's like no one will be able to catch it because it will be going down too fast. We're not at that point. And again, this is all unprecedented coordinated behavior. To maintain rates at zero or negative and keep things going as they are and appearing to be healthy. This is totally unprecedented, and that's why it's gone on longer than I think any of us, including me, would have expected it could. But when it falls apart, it will fall apart very quickly.
And then for the second part of that question as to how people can protect themselves, what can they do? What are your thoughts here?
I continue to believe that a very good protection is to remain as uninvolved as possible in the financial markets in terms of trying to extract cash as much as possible, particularly because banks are going away from wanting people to have a lot of cash. And even though the value might ultimately be a lot lower than it is right now, using it, keeping it, paying down debt, accumulating assets outside of the system, whether that's a small portion in gold, whether that is assets that can be used, whether that's down paying some of a mortgage or a boat or whatever is meaningful to someone personally, I think that's what needs to happen. The more you can sort of insulate your financial life from this chaotic artificial activity that's going on at the surface, the better. Now, people will still have money in pensions. You know, you're still going to want to have things saved. But the reality is saving money in a bank is a negative prospect. And so that's where any extraction of actual cash and keeping it aside or again, paying for assets or paying for debt, expensive debts is important. But also, you know, having some element in gold and having some element in assets that you're actually using and will you continue to use, because that helps preserve your not just financial wealth, it also helps preserve your sanity, because then you're not worried about what Janet Yellen is saying on any given day and trying to bet where the markets might go up or down on any given day. I think there'll be a point where there will be a big short that will come. Right now, again, they're sort of still trying to prolong the coordinated approach to keeping things up. So the extent that you can insulate yourself is good. The extent to which you have a small business that has currency risk, that you're not kind of involved in big currency transactions through the larger banks, but you want to try to more engage with your local community, your local associated businesses, your local banks. And I think that's always been, that continues to be what I do. I mean, I'll have coffee at my local shop before I'll get a Starbucks. I mean, all of those things help solidify your financial autonomy and also your community and also things from the ground up, which I believe is what we all need to be doing.
Nomi Prinz, thank you for joining us on King World News.
Thank you.
Be sure to tune in as we will continue to release interviews with the top people in the world throughout the week. Also, make sure to check out the King World News blog.